Hello, welcome to the 5280 podcast. Strap on and have a good time.
From the Mobile 5280 Studios Weekend Geek Update Special Report at the floor of Denver Comic Con, and we have someone that has been a longtime friend of mine and I admire immensely. The man's name is simply Z, and what he does is simply amazing. He is the founder, brainchild, and pioneer for Serenity Forge.
Hey, how's it going, sir? that was quite the intro there.
You like that?
Yeah, definitely. I always love people stroking my ego, but
well, here on this and this podcast, that happens not very often. So admire it.
Yeah.
Now you are. We'll catch everybody up because the last time you and I spoke, I was part of a different podcast team, and no one has actually had the pleasure of listening to you on the side. So you run and operate Serenity Forge, which is a video game development company.
Yeah, it's a small team. We're a team of 9 people located in Boulder, and we work on all sorts of different games. Games that focus on mostly trying to push the envelope forward, I would say. Games that would create meaning or change people's lives or something that would add more value in the game industry.
Because there's, let's face it, there's not a lot of engaging educational games out there. I mean, they kind of placate to a certain age group. But once you surpass that age group, it's third-person shooters and club vests.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to educational games, Smurf, one of the things about that term is that it has a huge negative connotation, right?
It does.
If you think about a negative, or if you think about an educational game, basically I'm saying it's a boring
it's
game.
It's a boring game,
right.
Because when you're like, oh, look, a toy store. Oh, it's educational toy. I don't want to go in.
Right. Yeah, but, you know, the funny thing is, every single game out there is inherently educational.
It is.
It really depends on what you're really teaching the player, right? I mean, you could be teaching the player how to knock over bricks on your phone, or you could be teaching player world history, like what Civilization does. So, you know, educational games, it's a loose term, but really all games are educational.
So, your background, what is your, I mean, how do you get into this? Because this, I mean, this is a dream job. They have schools dedicated. Do you want to be a video game programmer? Do you want to make your own games? You are the end result of what these poor people are doing. How do they become fashionably and as awesomely proficient in video games as you?
I mean, I think it's really easy to talk about passion, or it's really easy to talk about how hard I worked. But the truth is, I think anyone who is in a position like mine or like yours, we have to stumble across a significant amount of luck, right? You have to find the right people, work with the right people, find the opportunities to grab, essentially. I think with Serenity Forge especially, I was very lucky to come across some amazing co-founders in the beginning when we started working together. And then on top of that, just, you know, working on games that ended up working out. I think that's already something that not everyone could say, and not everyone has the luxury to say.
No, because when you think about it, when you go into business with your friends or with other people, I mean, the video game and as well as comic book projects and all that stuff that we're here for just so quickly fall apart. I mean, for creative differences, for whatever reasons. But nobody seems to last. And Serenity Forge is what? What year is this now for you guys?
Yeah. Well, you know, the entertainment industry is inherently hit-driven. Anything you do, it's either a hit or miss. You never know. Sometimes it just sounds like a great idea, but it still doesn't work for whatever reason that no individual human could really comprehend at that level. But, you know, I think the way that I look at starting a business, it's kind of like driving to work every day. If you think about driving to work, you have a destination, you have a starting point, and you have to get there. Like, you got to drive to work. And let's say that if there's a roadblock or maybe, like, construction, you know, along the way, you'll just drive around it. You're not going to be like, oh, shit, like, I better turn back. I can't go to work
today,
right?
Damn it to hell.
So I think that's kind of what Serenity Forge was like. When we started, we had a direction that we wanted to go. We hit tons of roadblocks. I mean, that was not easy. But we kept on going towards that direction. We had to go around some certain things. I mean, we had legal issues. We had all sorts of member issues.
Right.
There's tons of different things. But at the end of the day, we're still going towards that direction, and we're just going to keep on moving forward that way.
Now, you were at E3 last week. Or was it? No, 2 weeks ago now. Jeez almighty. 2 weeks ago, E3. What is that? I mean, I've been there as press, but I haven't been there as a presenter. That's got to be tremendous.
I mean, if you've been there as press, you know how big E3 is. E3 is definitely a stupidly large show with, I mean, the best way I can describe it is really just CEOs of AAA studios trying to compare who has the bigger dick. and you know, every year it's just like, oh, how much marketing money can I spend on...
So it's like a film festival. Great.
Yeah, sure, I guess. But yeah, I mean, like, we were showing some of our games out there. We were debuting some of our games, and it was really cool. Like, we had some amazing resources to work with. We had... I mean, for the first time in, like, my career, that we had, like, an hour and a half line of people standing waiting to play our games and get a poster. Like, you know the poster that I handed out earlier to you? Yeah, like, people stood in line for an hour and a half to get one of those at E3. So it just goes to show that gamers are passionate, and it's ridiculous sometimes when you're a creator to comprehend that.
Well, and I know that they're doing an official competition at a few of the cons this year, and people get paid to be official gamers. I mean, it is the elite of the elite, because it's like, what, 5% of people become professional video gamers?
I mean, professional gamers, that's a huge industry. I mean, ever since, what, 2012, League of Legends venues have been multiple times the size of the NBA. I mean, just to give you a perspective. I mean, the stadiums for the video game. I went to the League of Legends World semifinals last year at the Madison Square Garden in New York. And that was the largest sports event I've ever attended in my life. It's like bigger than any Rockies game or Nuggets game I've ever seen. So,
and whoever thought that League of Legends would pack Madison Square Garden?
Oh, it was ridiculous.
That is just mind-blowing to me to this day. And I'm just like, how do you... What?
Yeah, it was like $400 a ticket or something like that just to enter the room. And
you're just sitting there watching a kid play a video game. Five kids play a video game.
Five very talented kids, yes.
But yeah, to be fair, it is... I mean, it is huge amount of talent to do it, because not everybody is as dexterous as these kids are. I mean, it is... Yeah. Their hand-eye coordination and their reflexes... don't get on the wrong side of a pulse rifle with them.
Ultimately, when it comes to comes down to it, it's esports is sports too, right?
Yep,
and I think when it comes to games, probably more people are playing League of Legends as we speak than there are probably people playing football. So.
I will agree with that.
Yeah.
Now, as you were growing up, your passion for video games, I'm sure, was there. What was your go-to game? What was the one that you even to this day still like, oh? I mean, I know it's not like as trite as Final Fantasy or something like that, because I know you personally, but the listeners don't. So where is your heart?
You know, I play a lot of different games nowadays, but when I look back on it, I actually look back a lot at some of the Asian, like Chinese. I mean, I grew up Chinese, so I speak Chinese and stuff. I played a lot of really cool Chinese games that in no way would they ever be localized here in America just because of the cultural difference.
Right.
But the truth is, like, Chinese people, when they design games, they actually have a really unique, like, societal focus on how they make games. Maybe it's the communism, maybe it's, you know, something with the culture.
Well, they're always so in depth with the story. I mean, it is extremely character driven. It's not just a simple, well, throw it up.
I think the coolest part about their design philosophy is the fact that whenever they design a game, they always think about, if a kid is playing this, what are they learning from this game? Like, I was playing a recent Chinese RPG, and you know, one of the quests that I was doing, it was kind of out of place, but it was literally like teaching the main character how important it is to not talk to strangers, right? In this RPG, like, imagine Final Fantasy. In this RPG, where you're going around slaying gods and all that stuff, but you're learning how to not talk to strangers. I mean, it's interesting. Like, I know that kids who are playing this game probably just learn a lesson. Maybe save their lives somewhere down the road.
But it's kind of funny, because you're doing an RPG, and the point of an RPG is to go out and talk to strangers. But this quest,
yeah, this quest,
don't talk to strangers.
Not at all. But I mean, the way that they did it, it was pretty nice. But still, like, it just goes to show that their mentality is in the right place. Like, they know that they are creating waves with their games, and they know that when kids play these games, they're responsible to show them something educational.
Impressive. So the. And this fits really well into the cog of Serenity Forge. Because, I mean, you've done TED Talks, which I applaud. That's an endeavor all on its own. But, I mean, you've taken it as, I almost want to say, your personal quest to do education, but in an engaging and a fun way.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to tell you a little bit about kind of the projects that we've been working on,
mm-hmm.
we wrapped up a project with the St. Jude Children's Hospital. We were working with them to create video games that are installed on like 20-foot long walls inside the hallways of the hospitals that they're building in Memphis.
Wow.
And it's all just motion-controlled games. So it's mostly aimed towards terminally ill kids between the ages of 5 to 10. Kids with leukemia mostly, and they're suffering, they're going through chemotherapy.
Oh.
Low mobility kids. So these games that we made, kids can roll up on their wheelchair, put their arms out, and just fly around as an eagle inside.
Aww.
The game, so that when they're, you know, trapped in the hospital going through treatment, they can feel a sense of freedom. I mean, like, games like this, we really do believe will change the world, or at least change that one person's life.
I mean, and with the Colorado Ghostbusters, we've done Children's Hospital, and I applaud these kids. They are brave. Mm-hmm. There is no way in hell that I could probably find it in myself to smile, but every day these kids are just indomitable spirits.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm just like, I want to grow up and be like you, kid.
Yeah, I mean, those kids are some of the most resilient people I've ever met. I think it's ridiculous. In a world, in a country at least, world maybe not so much, a country where it's so easy to always complain about what you're handed and what you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
You look at these kids, and they have some of the worst conditions that a kid in America could have.
Yep.
And they feel happy, and they're glad, and they're able to play a game for an hour every day. That's how much energy they have, and they're thankful for it. And
mm-hmm.
that's just tremendous.
They're content, and they're like, okay, well, you know, had fun.
Yep, yeah.
So how long did it take you to develop the interactive? Because I didn't know about that one.
That took about a year, actually. So
okay.
We closed that last July, and then so we started probably somewhere around the September before then.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So now what else did you unveil at E3? What was your big spotlight this year?
Yeah, so we were announcing two different Switch games for the E3 press.
So you have an actual game on the Switch?
Yeah, we have two, actually.
Oh, my God, you bastard.
Yeah, so we have The King's Bird is officially announced for the Nintendo Switch.
Okay.
Along with Once Upon a Coma. Both games are clearly emotionally driven narrative stories.
Right.
Once Upon a Coma is a game about a character named Pete who attempted to commit suicide. And what happened is that it didn't quite go through, you know, thankfully, I suppose.
He messed it up.
Yeah, but however, because of his attempt, he put himself inside a coma, and he's on his deathbed. So his mother is kind of sitting next to his deathbed, singing him lullabies and telling him stories and trying to get him back. And the entire game takes place in his head. It's basically a giant mind trip, an exploratory game about his psyche. And you get to learn more about Pete, more about his life, the people in his life, his abusive father. And in the end, you remind Pete of his mom. And he decides to come back after all. So that's kind
of
the game.
Yep. That is in depth. I mean, that is detailed. So how many levels are in the game?
So it's a non-linear structure. So
okay.
There's not really any levels. It's just like one giant. Imagine like a really small scale Zelda game, but in 2D. I think that's probably, but a lot more crying involved when you're playing it. That's probably what it is.
You get through the chapter. It's like that in Final Fantasy where Aerith dies. You're like, just like every level, you're like, oh, can't, oh, no.
Yeah.
But that's good. It's invoking a response. That's impressive.
Yeah, yeah. We're really happy to be working on it.
So where did you pull the inspiration from this? Is this driven off of a story from an author, or is this out of your mind, or where did this come in from?
Tons of different inspirations. For me personally, I think the inspiration mostly came from, it's an unfortunate personal story, but one of my best friends from my childhood, who was also a game designer when we first started the company, his name is Victor, and back in 2012, he committed suicide due to depression. And for me personally, I think that's a really, it's something that I, even today, it's I have trouble thinking about. And really, I guess it fuels my passion.
You're the champion for the cause. Absolutely.
Yeah, I just don't want that to happen again for anyone else.
No, I mean, and it's a horrible way for someone to feel that that's the only answer. Because there's so many people out there to help, but in their mind they don't think that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the sad thing.
Yep.
Well, hopefully this game brings about a social awareness. So now, where is this game available? This is only on Switch.
Right now we have announced it for the Nintendo Switch and the PC. However, we're not sure exactly when we're going to release it yet. It's probably going to be sometime next year. That's all TBA, I suppose.
All right, yeah. Fair enough. Now, did you get to play with the Switch at all?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Do you like it?
I think it's amazing, actually. I
got cranky.
It's hard to describe my feelings for it because I have to kind of keep my developer mindset off.
Absolutely. You're an engineer. You're out there. You're light years ahead of us, and you know what we want today for tomorrow.
From an engineering standpoint, it's actually a fantastic piece of hardware. It's probably one of the easiest consoles we've ever worked with, way easier than PS4 or the Xbox One, and it's just phenomenal, the amount of technology that goes into it. I don't know if you know this, but the Nintendo Switch is actually more powerful than a Xbox One.
Shut up.
Yeah, that's
I don't believe
that's how that's how
you
power-
liar.
No, that's how powerful this console is, and it's handheld, so that's just crazy.
Wow.
Blows my mind. As a gamer, I think the library is very thin right now. Their production,
it's anemic.
Yeah, their production is very low, so they're very low on their dev kits. Not a lot of people are making Nintendo Switch games. And we're only so lucky because we have a working relationship with them since the Wii U, so we've been building games for the Wii U. So I think a lot of great games should be on the Switch, and they cannot be yet because of their hardware constraints. But ultimately, it's just a matter of time.
It's the next step. Yeah. It's the next platform.
Yeah, I think a year from now, it's going to be way bigger than it is.
Wow. I know my brother's pissed because he's like, Splatoon 2 is on the Switch. It's not on the... Damn it. He's all like, I want to go play. Sorry.
No.
So now your second game is also available on Switch.
Yeah.
What is this game?
So the King's Bird, I've been talking about it for years. It's still being made. It's funny. Like, earlier today, as soon as the show floor opened, there was a guy that walked by our booth. He literally like stood there for 5 seconds, looked at it. I was like, oh, hey, it's the King's Bird. And then under his breath, he said, still not out yet. And then he walked away.
You know, so, I can see some similarities again with Final Fantasy. I don't know.
So we've been working on it for a while now. It's always been kind of our side project, but it's still a huge passion of ours. So, I mean, like, As an adult company, I guess, you have a lot of responsibilities you have to fill, and sometimes passion projects don't get the spotlight.
They don't get... You got to pay the bills, brother. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Or the bills,
exactly.
Okay, my bird hasn't landed yet, but that's all right. It's still flying. It hasn't died yet.
Yeah. So hopefully we are looking to release the game next year. The King's Bird is a momentum-driven platformer game inspired a lot by games like Dust Force and Journey.
Ooh.
So what happens in the game is that the main character is a girl named Quill, and she is trapped in a kingdom ruled by a tyrant king, and this tyrant king placed a cage on the kingdom so no one could escape. However, eventually you find a way to run away and also find a way to tear down the barrier to free all of the citizens. The problem is, as soon as you remove the barrier, you realize why it is that the king
placed it. Why it was there in the first place?
Exactly. So I think it's a very personal lesson for the characters in the game about the duality between chaos and order and tyranny and freedom.
Excellent. So with your passion for video games and what you saw at E3, what are you most looking forward to in the next season?
You know, I think it's actually really cool how quote-unquote indie games are getting more popular.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to overstep because I wasn't there, but it seems that that's kind of where the pendulum is going. Same with, like, comic books. Everyone's, like, going the indie route, but why do you say that?
Because they're better games. I don't know. Like, indie games are more fun, I think. I don't know if you watched some of the E3 press conferences.
I did.
Like, 80% of the games are just some kind of first-person shooter with another setting, with another premise, another main character, right? I just don't like first-person shooter games. Like, I guess it's a personal preference. I don't think they're very fun. I don't think they're very unique. And it's point-and-click adventures. You point and you click at something, right?
It's been beaten to death.
Yeah.
I mean, and I keep forgetting the new game that they want to compete with, Destiny, where you get into the suit and you're bouncing around from world to world. And I don't remember, because it's Xbox.
Right.
And I don't remember the name of the game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when they're showing it, again, I'm thinking, all right, so it's the same premise rehashed over and over and over again. And it's just,
You know, I think it's sad because when I see something like that, I'm just like, wow, you know, 10 minutes of this game could have made 5 of our games. Like, that's how expensive those games are. Operating costs for Square Enix is, what was it, like $200,000 per hour or per day? Something like that.
I think it's per day. Yeah. I did see that stat. Yeah, and I just was like, holy hell.
Yeah, it's crazy how expensive some of these games are. And how little amount of content is actually in the game. I think everyone's always competing over what's the best looking game or, you know, whatever. Maybe, you know, you could argue that the gamers want it and that's why they keep on doing it. But maybe you could also say that the game developers are not pushing the right things to the gamers.
Well, and I mean, that's a slippery slope because they say that this is what the gamers want. They want better graphics. They want brighter backgrounds. I think what gamers want is a decent fucking game. I mean, that's what it comes down to, that something that they're going to play for hours and hours. I mean, and I think they're stuck in these shooters because there's nothing else, and it's their crutch.
Yep.
It's an easy game. They just need a distraction, something to plug into,
yep.
And what it is.
The rule of thumb when it comes to the game industry is that game design doesn't sell games. Marketing budget sells games.
Yes.
Yeah, so if people keep on putting marketing budget behind first-person shooters, and those are the only games that are going to sell. And no matter what you do, you can't really change it. And that's what the market is going to demand as time goes on, because that's what's defined to be video games. Mm-hmm. If you make an indie game, that's not a video game, because you don't get to shoot someone.
No. I mean, I will tell you right now, I did put money down on Fractured Butthole. I'm really looking forward to the next South Park game. And Battle Chasers from Airship has finally got a date for it, which is Joe Madureña's baby. He used to draw X-Men comics. And that one is like a strategy-based game, but it's also kind of time. So it's a real-time strategy, which I'm actually looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, I think some of these non-FPS games out there, they're evolving into something quite unique nowadays, because they... nowadays, when you make a game, you can't make a game for everyone.
No.
You have to make a game for a very small audience, and that's the only kind of game that's ever going to sell. You know, whenever we make a game, we have to think about, why would someone play this game over every other video game in the world?
Which is an entirely different approach than everybody else. They're going to want to play this game because everything sucks. And our marketing proves it.
Yeah.
So... what's next? What's on the horizon?
So, I mean, we're going to release some games. Mystic Melee is coming out in 2 weeks for Steam Early Access.
Okay.
After that, I believe Where the Water Tastes Like Wine will be coming out early next year in January. We're going to be ramping up some huge exciting announcements pretty soon, starting next month. Beyond that, I mean, we'll be showing at EVO this year. We'll be showing at the Smithsonian. Mystic Melee was selected to be a Smithsonian art piece, actually.
Holy crap!
Yeah, so
that's
huge! Yeah, so I'll be flying out there in a couple months. And then we have 2 more Dream Hacks. And then we have to go to LA for IndieCade. PAX. I'm not too sure yet.
So yeah, there's but a which lot of PAX? Traveling. There's so many PAX that are
West.
Popping up. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I heard, like, there's a PAX Florida. And I'm like... what?
Yeah, I heard something about like a PAX board game thing.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I have no clue about it.
Someone told me about that and I lost my shit. I'm like, what? Seriously? Shut up.
Yeah.
So if they want to follow you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, so if you want to follow Serenity Forge and all the games, you can just go to Twitter at Serenity Forge, or go to Facebook, facebook.com/Serenity Forge. My personal Twitter is just my full name, Zhenghua Yang. I'm guessing you're probably going to link it somewhere, but it's spelled Zhenghua Yang, just at that sense.
Yeah, because you know I'm going to butcher your name. You already know that.
Yeah.
And we do want to take a moment to acknowledge his beautiful girlfriend, who has not been part of this podcast for a couple years now.
Yeah.
Who is doing her own thing, and oddly enough, it's part of video games.
Yeah.
Wait, you know how this works. Talking to the mic.
Hi.
For the players at home, who are you?
Hi, my name is Maddie, but I go by Pew Pew Cat. I have my own website called pewpewcat.com. It's basically, I review indie games. Indie games have become a passion in my life, especially after meeting Zhenghua. And it's just one of those things that I fell in love with, because you got indie games like Undertale and Gone Home and things that have changed people's perspectives on life, and I wanted to explore more of those, get more into the genre, and find and just get the word out there, because not a lot of people know about these indie games. So that's what my website does, is I review with my indie games that I play. Yeah.
So okay, I gotta know, because when we were talking back in the day, and I hate to say back in the day, only for 2 years ago, but how much has your gaming changed from then to now?
My game?
Yeah, your gaming. Because, I mean, you played a specific game before.
Yeah.
I mean, how much have you evolved as a player since going into the indie side?
So, when I first started playing indie games, like, I would get stuck for hours on a little puzzle game, like Limbo. I got stuck for hours, was really frustrated by it. But now that Inside came out, I was able to beat that within a couple hours. I never got frustrated, and I'm able to see the tricks that people put into their games. But I also search out for the more meaningful games, like To the Moon, which that game made me cry so hard. And it's just, I look for those more meaningful indie games. Mind you, I do play a bunch of different other, like, small shooter games. Like,
we review games.
Puzzle platformers, like Cave Blazers. And, I mean, Journey was one of those games that was absolutely amazing and gorgeous, and everybody should try to play that if they can. Goodness. Yeah, that's about, I mean, I've gone from just playing Kingdom Hearts all the time to now I play a wide variety of different games and get interested in all these new games that are coming out. And I mean, like, if you guys haven't checked out Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, it looks absolutely amazing. And I mean, Geek and Sundry even mentioned it, that it was one of the best games at E3 that they saw. So
wow. What was the best game you saw at E3?
The Last Night.
Last Night.
It is a pixel art game.
Z didn't like that choice. He made a face.
No, he was there with me, because we got to see an up close and personal, what would you say that it is?
A private showing.
We got a private showing.
Look
of
at you,
The Last Night.
Top
yeah.
shelf carte blanche type little.
You got to know the right people.
Evidently.
Yeah.
Take lessons from you now.
Yeah. It looks absolutely stunning. I'm interested, because it's about a dystopian future, and I'm interested in seeing where they go with their story. Because at first, it was like an anti-feminism thing, but in the last couple of years, they have started changing it, and now he's pro-feminism, isn't anti it anymore. But he's trying to just, what would you say? It's a consumer base. It's like a future where it is nothing but consumer base, and you're judged off of what you consume. So,
consumer as in like eat?
No, as like the entertainment that you get.
Really?
Yeah. Like, wow. It's What is it, like, embedded in their brain so that they can see, like, a ball or something?
So it's about a dystopian future where AI has taken over everything, and including creation of art. So I think that's the kind of the cool part of it. So it's in this world where you are no longer defined by what you create, but what you consume.
The main character loses that ability. So he has to live in this world where everybody is consumed by this AI.
Wow. All right.
See, it sounds really interesting.
I know.
And it looks amazing.
Trippy.
And they've put on hours and hours on this. So.
Wow. All right. Then I will try and give it a ride. So now, if the team wants to follow you, Pew Pew Cat, how do they need to do that?
So my Twitter handle is at cat, C-A-T, P-E-W, P-E-W, so cat Pew Pew. You can follow me on Facebook at Gamer Pew Pew Cat, and then I'm also on YouTube. You can just look up youtube.com/PewPewCat, and then, I'm on Instagram as well. Just type in Pew Pew Cat, you'll find me.
All right. Anything else, Z? Any little tidbits you want to give me before you go back and play with the kids upstairs?
No, nothing much. I mean, thank you so much for inviting me again. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. We see each other a lot, but we don't really have a lot of opportunities to sit down and chat. So I always appreciate, these in-depth conversations. It's always a lot more fun, I think.
A lot more fun. I look forward to see a lot of inappropriate thoughts. He's behind me. I got Stash behind me. When you go to the Smithsonian, I want pictures, dude, because that is mind-blowing.
Pixel Galaxy was already shown at the Smithsonian
last year, January.
Yeah, was it? See, I missed this. It pisses me off. I'm really angry.
You need to get on Facebook more.
I don't have time. I'm too busy.
We'll definitely send you pictures.
Yes, I want pictures. Because that is, in my mind, that is the zenith. That is...
It's top of the mountain.
It's
really awesome that they're recognizing video game as art. I'll say that.
It's tremendous. Wow. Yeah. Alrighty, guys. I will let you get back to the floor. Thank you so much for taking time out. And make sure you guys at home click on Z's page. We'll have a link to it on the page. In addition to Pew Pew Cat.
Thank you.
Who our love runs deep. And in the end, we're all stories. So make it a good one.